something with a cheery "see you later" would not be going home ever again. Pete used to chew on the emotional details of bad incidents, but somewhere along the line he stopped. He didn't set out to mentally detach himself, it just happened. He did his job to the best of his ability, and he was good at it. Strong, fearless, insightful, tenacious, but he left it at the door with his boots. He shouldn't have even been there that night. He was covering a couple of hours for Rav, whose dad had had a fall. He should have been at home, shoes kicked off, fire on, dinner in the oven. Whoever was first in made the evening meal was the unwritten rule, although he was a much better cook than his wife was, and so he tended to do more than his fair share of that particular duty. He should have been looking out of the window at the sleet, grateful to be dry and indoors, and intrigued about what the night would hold for him as he twisted the top off a bottle of red and poured out two glasses to let them breathe and air. Looking back, he wasn't sure what would have been worse. Waiting in the cosy warmth of the kitchen, getting slightly annoyed that the top of his shepherd's pie was over brown, the peaks blackening, wondering where Tara was after she'd rung and asked him to go straight home after his shift because she had something she wanted to tell him, looking at the clock, getting anxious. Or being there, in the thick of it all, the smoke, the bitter, hard rain turning into snow, the lights, the noise, the chaos, being part of the scene, seeing it all firsthand, registering the red car in the middle of all that crushed, mangled, dark metal, like the one coloured frame in an otherwise black and white movie. Krish Khatri madly wrenching glass away, Sal crunching determinedly with the cutters, the paramedic pushing in through the driver's side window at a weird, uncomfortable angle in order to get to the driver. Pete remembered screaming, "Jesus Christ, it's Tara!" He remembered big Andy Burlap's arms closing around him. He remembered holding his wife's tiny, beloved hand, chill to the touch, desperately trying to rub warmth into it, a warmth it could not sustain, because Tara, who had set off for work that morning with a cheery "see you later," would not be going home ever again. South. I quote my practiced answer, my face a perfect mask. "I'm doing good, I'm fine, how very kind of you to ask." I stumble and exist, and I pretend that things aren't hard, while my compass spins and spits behind a stoical facade. My life is plunging south, yet I smile, make you believe that I'm waving and not drowning in this lake of acid grief. Life Gone South, Linda Flowers. Chapter 1. Late August. For a couple of hours every Wednesday evening, this lovely room was Molly Jones-Hoyland's kingdom. She'd originally planned to hold her Molly's Club sessions in her home, but then her friend Lainey had suggested she use her tea shop. After all, there was plenty of parking nearby, comfortable seating inside, and more than enough tea and cake to accompany the sympathy. Plus, it had the atmosphere, for the tea shop had a welcoming, soothing ambience perfectly suited to people who were feeling disorientated, adrift. Indeed, the little tea shop on the corner had drawn Molly in like a magnet years ago, and she had found not only friendship there, but a true purpose. Opening the door to it had heralded the opening of a door into another life, a bigger life than the one she'd been living up to that point. There was magic within its walls. She was convinced of it. The tea shop might have been a newly built property put up on the site of a demolished wire factory, but she had long suspected that beneath it, ancient and benign ley lines ran, because there had to be some explanation why anyone who stepped inside felt instantly calmed, relaxed, at home. Molly was in her mid-70s, but she still had a lot of energy for her pet project, to help people through grief, to see them through their loss, their anger, their bewilderment, help them to reach acceptance just by bringing them into a safe arena where they could talk and share their experiences. She had no formal qualification in grief counselling, though she'd known much sadness and loss in her own life, but she had personally